Chapter 25. Look to your kingdoms. Adigalia stared at the empty cell with a sinking sensation in the pit of her stomach, though that could have been caused by the still-active wards enclosing the high-security cells. Trying to reach into the Force to get some sense of who had been here, besides Obi-Wan Kenobi, which she didn't need the Force to tell her, was useless. The wards blurred all traces of whoever had come before her. Even a Kefar's psychometric abilities would be wasted, though that didn't mean Adi wasn't going to get Quinlan Vos down here to try. She glanced at the two temple guards standing on either side of her, the same ones who had been on duty here last night. It was impossible to read their expressions through their concealing masks. Without the Force, Adi had no idea what was going through their heads. The high security cells shouldn't have been left unguarded at any point, and no guard would leave their post. They couldn't be bribed, they couldn't be distracted, and they couldn't be turned against the Order. Or at least, that was what everyone believed. That had been true since the days of the Old Republic. It should have been a universal truth of the Order. And yet, Obi-Wan Kenobi was still gone. She clicked her comlink on. Get Quinlan Vos down to the high security cells. Yes, Master Galia. Psychometry didn't quite work like most regular Force talents, so there was the faintest chance that Vos would be able to get something off the cell. If she was a betting woman, Adi wouldn't have put any money on it, but it was worth a try. Granted, she wasn't actually sure how amenable Vos would be to trying to track down Kenobi, since they were old friends from their Padawan days. But he was still a Jedi Knight. He would do as he was ordered. She turned at the sound of a step behind her, and saw Mace Windu approaching down the narrow corridor, his face doing something complicated as he looked past her at the empty cell. "I came down to talk to Obi-Wan about something we heard from Naboo, and saw that the guards outside were gone," he said. "Where is he?" "I don't know," Adi admitted. I came down. The guards were on duty when I came in, but he wasn't here. She gestured at the security panel. Locks and ray shields are both engaged. There's a dip in power about 12 hours ago that was probably someone deactivating them, but there's no personal code attached. She hesitated, not wanting to say it, but Mace filled in for her, his voice bleak. "Someone on the High Council could have done that." "But who?" Adi asked, frustrated. She swept a hand at the empty cell. "Who would do this? Act against the Order? Kenobi might not be a Darksider or a Sith, but he's still a traitor. To betray the Order..." Her comlink beeped again, interrupting her. "Yes?"
"Master Vos isn't in his quarters, or answering his comlink, Master Galia. We're trying to find him on the temple security systems now."
"Do a full scan," Adi ordered, glancing at Mace. She grimaced, then added, "I want to know if there's anyone who isn't in the temple who should be."
"Master Galia?"
said the knight on the other end, one of several assigned to temple security. Adi didn't know her name off the top of her head, but she was fairly certain she wasn't a guard. Maybe that was for the best right now. "You heard me. I want to know if there's anyone missing or anyone here who shouldn't be." There was a momentary pause. Then the knight said, sounding nervous,
That might take some time, Master Gallia. Do you still want us to look for Master Voss?
Mace leaned forward to speak into the comlink. This is Windu. Do it. He met Adi's eyes as she clicked the comlink off.
Would he?
Quinlan isn't a good enough slicer to get into the security systems, Adi said. The only knights who are all deployed to Naboo.
You're right.
Mace put a hand to his forehead, grimacing, then jerked his head back toward the corridor. He and Adi retreated from the headache-inducing press of the wards, back out into the regular underlevels, and moved out of earshot of the guards as they resumed their posts outside the now-empty cells. Adi let out a breath, folding her hands into the sleeves of her robes. She was glad to be free of the force-nulling wards, but that also meant that she was well aware of the underlying tension that had filled the temple since Kenobi had walked out of the chamber of the ordeal still breathing. It wasn't a very Jedi-like thought, but Kenobi dying in the trials would have saved them all a lot of trouble.
Adi, Mace said softly, what were you doing down here?
Adi hesitated, then told him the truth.
I don't know, she said.
Off his raised eyebrow, she admitted. I hadn't decided yet.
Maybe someone else had the same idea. It crossed my mind.
She blinked at the admission, but could feel his deadly seriousness in the Force. Like her, Mace had abstained from the vote on Kenobi's fate. Maybe like her, he was also wishing he hadn't done so. One more vote in Kenobi's favor would have tied the results. Two would have tipped them in the opposite direction.
The Order is not going to survive this.
She didn't know where that thought came from, but the realization made her stomach turn over. The Jedi have weathered worse storms than this, she reminded herself. But not without casualties.
Damn you, Qui-Gon. Why did you have to die and stick me with this?
Qui-Gon Jinn would have been able to talk his erstwhile Padawan around. Except, of course, if Qui-Gon had lived, Obi-Wan would never have left the Order, and they wouldn't be having this problem in the first place. If Qui-Gon had lived, Naboo would probably still be part of the Republic. None of this would be happening.
Adi had come back from the executive office with most of the other members of the Jedi Council when the already overstressed Republic Milnet had failed from the strain of live updates on the invasion. Only Yoda had remained behind, his expression suggesting that he intended to have some serious words with the Supreme Chancellor. Mace, along with the other council members that had been on the task force and were still officially presumed dead or captured, had remained behind in the temple to monitor the invasion from the operations center. If a counselor had let Kenobi out, it had to have been one of them. All the others had been at the executive office with her.
I am not going to like the answer to this, Adi thought, and asked Mace.
Did anyone leave the ops center? Long enough to come down here, I mean.
Mace frowned in the direction of the temple guards and said,
Everyone left at one point or another. Even I did.
Adi had a sick sensation in the pit of her stomach. So it could have been any of them.
It wasn't me, Mace pointed out, but grimaced.
Yoda's not going to take this well.
No one's going to take this well. Try as she might, Adi couldn't get her head around anyone on the council doing this. There was too much at stake, and all of them knew that. Except that was just it. There was more at stake than just Obi-Wan Kenobi's mind and soul. More at stake than the survival of the Republic. The vote had passed, just barely. And the moment it had, something had changed in the Jedi Order, even if no one quite knew what that meant yet.
Maybe this is the will of the Force.
Adi didn't know whether or not that was reassuring,
The Force wasn't kind, wasn't gentle. It served the Sith as well as the Jedi. Or was served by, rather, which was the point that even the Jedi often forgot. Her comlink beeped again. Addie took it out, Windu leaning in to listen. This is Galia.
Master Galia, we've completed the temple scan. There are 6 Jedi currently absent from the temple. One of them is Master Yoda.
He's at the executive office.
The others could just be older Padawans or younger knights so it snuck out of the temple for a good time, which wasn't unheard of during the lockdown. Of course, most of them had usually returned by now. It was past dawn on this side of the planet. But that didn't mean that some of them weren't still out in a drunken stupor. All the stories about Jedi being well-behaved and responsible were just that. Stories. Most of them behaved like any other young sentients given the opportunity.
The others are the Masters Thom and Thrasan, the Knight Quinlan Vos, and the Padawans Barriss Offee and Ahsoka Tano, Master Galia.
Adi didn't even try to bite back her curse. Mace's mouth just set, his expression grim, and he said into the comlink, "Thank you. This information doesn't go to anyone else, is that understood? Master Galia and I are the only ones cleared for it now." The knight on the other end sounded rather shocked as she said,
"Yes, Master Windu, I understand."
She hesitated.
"What about Master Drolig?"
"I'll deal with Sid myself. Windu out."
Addie clicked off the comlink and leaned back against the wall, running her hands over her face. Vos had been Kenobi's best friend. Thom and Tra had been his advocates during his trial. And the Padawans, Barriss's master Luminara, was believed to be in CIS custody on Naboo. And even if she hadn't been, Luminara Unduli had been one of Kenobi's closest friends in the Order. And Ahsoka Tano. She looked up at Mace.
"Plo wouldn't," she said.
"He spoke out on Obi-Wan's behalf, but... This is..."
"Treason," she wanted to say, but the words stuck in her throat. Plo had been on the council almost as long as she had. Even the idea should have been utterly absurd.
"Don't be hasty," Mace warned, but he looked troubled. "It could just be coincidence."
Addie took a deep breath.
"Was Thom in the op center?" He had been involved in much of the mission planning, since he ran Jedi Intelligence, and had spent most of that time clashing with the Special Operations Bureau, which disapproved of the fact that the Jedi didn't share information if they could help it. Thom had pointed out that they had been the ones stupid enough to allow one of Amidala's known sympathizers access to the SOB systems. It was their own fault that Bail Organa had gutted them when Alderaan had seceded.
Mace met her eyes.
"No. If he's gone with Kenobi..."
"Thom wouldn't do that."
Addie had known Thom since they had both been younglings together. Them and Qui-Gon and Plo. She knew him as well as anyone else in the Order. Even his own Padawan. Or at least she thought she had.
"We need to find them. Now, before word of this gets out."
Mace pushed off the wall, groaning.
"The power drop was 12 hours ago.
At her nod, he grimaced and added,
"We have to face the possibility that they've already left the planet."
All the speeder and starship bays were meant to be shut down, but a determined knight could have gotten past that without too much trouble, especially if one or more masters had been involved.
"I'll alert Sin," Addie said. "He can have the temple guards start..."
She stopped, thinking about the fact that somehow, impossibly, Kenobi must have gotten past the guards on his cell without any evidence of a struggle, which the guards would have admitted anyway. Mace met her gaze, understanding passing wordlessly between them.
"It could have been anyone," Addie thought. "Even Sin Drolig.
And maybe whoever it was had made the right decision. But right for who?
We can't keep this from Dooku anymore, Mace said abruptly. If the order is compromised, I'll go to the executive office and alert Yoda and the Chancellor.
Addie frowned. Are you sure about that?
Dooku shouldn't have been kept out of the loop in the first place, Mace said.
That was my wisdom at the time. But the situation has changed, and there's something that happened on Naboo that he has to be informed of that could affect Kenobi's actions.
What? Mace told her.
Addie swore.
You're right. This changes everything.
Captain Kenobi. Obi-Wan, Ahsoka reminded herself with unexpected effort. Fell asleep almost as soon as they entered hyperspace, slumping over in the co-pilot's seat with his chin propped against his fist. Master Voss leaned over him and put a hand on the back of his neck, frowning a little. Ahsoka felt the force flex around them, caught between the two consular strength knights before it evened out.
"Is he all right?" she asked.
Barriss had retreated from the cockpit before they'd left orbit, so the only people there were her and the two knights.
Master Voss looked up and nodded, though he didn't move his hand.
"Backlash from the trials," he said. "I don't think it kicked in until after he got out of the cells. The wards must have delayed it. He'll be okay, though. He just needs to sleep it off and let the Force do its thing."
Ahsoka had heard about that happening. Taking the trials required a lot of Force energy, usually used in a way that no Padawan had ever done before and probably never would again. And after being cut off from the Force for so long, the backlash had to be even worse than usual. Ahsoka wondered if his trials had been anything like what a normal Padawan's would have been. Not that there was anything like normal for the Jedi trials or the Chamber of the Ordeal.
"It's a better part of a standard day to Alderaan," Master Voss went on, "and we'll have to come out of hyperspace at Voltar to switch hyperlanes. Smugglers are out," he added at Ahsoka's gesture of surprise.
She thought the easiest way to get to Alderaan from Coruscant was through Bryn Thal, which was at least half again as long.
"It's not as much anymore, but the Republic doesn't patrol it. Besides, the fleet was massing in Bryn Thal, and even if they aren't there anymore, I'd rather not take the chance of running into them with Obi-Wan in tow."
Ahsoka nodded, then blurted out what she had been wondering all day.
"Have you ever met Queen Amidala before?"
Master Voss let go of Kenobi and leaned back in his seat, scratching at his forehead.
"Once, about 7 years ago."
"What's she like?"
"She's very... well, very."
He glanced at Kenobi.
"Let me put it this way. Once you meet her, you start understanding why, and I'm quoting here, the most promising Jedi apprentice in a century left the Order for her."
"Who said that?"
"Dooku. Yoda. Couple of people. No one who really cared about what everyone else from that generation thought."
He raised an eyebrow at her.
"You're probably too young to remember the liberation of Naboo when Obi-Wan resigned."
"I was 3. Ahsoka frowned a little, trying to work out if any of the scandal had made its way into the creche.
"All I remember was that everyone was upset, even the creche masters."
"Upset is one way to put it."
His expression was thoughtful.
"Ayla and I were on Coruscant then. It was, well, it was something, all right. None of us saw it coming, and before that, no one had resigned from the Order in more than a century. Really resigned, I mean, not just took off because they couldn't handle it anymore. And Obi-Wan did it on the holonet, too, in front of every reporter in the mid-rim. All the Jedi in the temple practically had a mass coronary. Dooku resigning a couple days later didn't have quite the same effect."
He looked at Kenobi again.
"I thought he'd lost his mind. I didn't see him for another 2 years after that. Not until he and Amidala came to Coruscant for Gunray's trial."
"Was that when you met the Queen?"
"No, that was later."
He grinned suddenly.
The Council doesn't know that I'm the only Jedi in over a decade that's been on Naboo. Besides Luminara and Eeth, I mean. I was running an op in the Chomel sector. Things went south, and I had to lie low for a while. Dropping in on Obi-Wan seemed like a good idea at the time. Without opening his eyes, Captain Kenobi said, "By that he means I almost shot him when I opened my bedroom door and found him bleeding all over my floor." "It wasn't that much blood," Master Voss protested. "They had to rip up the entire carpet. It survived the occupation. It couldn't survive 5 hours with you." Kenobi finally opened one eye, peering at him.
"What, the entire carpet?"
"Uh-huh. Cleaning droids couldn't get the bloodstains off, and no one could match the dye to replace the bit you ruined. It was easier to tear the whole thing out and install a new one."
"Good to be royalty,"
Master Voss said, shaking his head.
Kenobi snorted, pushing himself upright in his seat. He pressed his fingertips to his forehead and grimaced.
"Backlash. Wonderful. Why didn't I just cut open my head and pour battery acid in it? It might have hurt less."
Master Voss stretched a hand out towards him, arching an eyebrow.
"You want me to put you under?"
Kenobi sighed. "How long until we reach Alderaan?"
"A while. Now the computer still has to route us around that unstable star cluster in the Tukor sector."
"Ancestors."
He pinched the bridge of his nose between his fingers.
"Blast it. Fine. If I don't come out of it on my own, wake me when we come out of hyperspace. I've got the codes to get us into the palace hangars. Or if we're about to be blasted out of the stars."
Master Voss rolled his eyes and got to his feet, offering Kenobi a hand up.
"I'll take you to the cabin so you can lie down. It'll be easier on your back."
"My back is not the problem," Kenobi said, but he let Master Voss pull him to his feet.
Master Voss smirked at him.
"I can make it one if you like."
"That's amazing," Kenobi said, grinning back at him. For a moment, Ahsoka felt the heat in the Force, and was glad that Togruta were incapable of blushing the way humans did. "I've been out of Jedi custody for about 3 hours, and you're already hitting on me. That has to be a new record."
Master Voss snorted.
"Technically speaking, you're still in Jedi custody."
"Technically speaking, I don't think it counts as Jedi custody after you broke me out of the Jedi temple and gave me back my weapon," Kenobi said dryly. "Especially since you just offered to sleep with me."
"You still haven't given me an answer on that one, by the way."
"Uh-huh," Kenobi said. "Have I told you lately that your foreplay needs work?"
"Not lately."
Ahsoka made a soft, shocked sound that she didn't think either of the men heard. She was starting to think that they had forgotten about her presence when Master Voss turned and said,
"Ahsoka, keep an eye on Barriss, all right? I don't want you to let her into this cockpit. Just because the Holonet's relays are down doesn't mean that they won't come back up here before I reach Alderaan. I don't want Barriss to start thinking about something other than how badly she wants Luminara back and decide to do something rash, like drop us out of hyperspace or call the temple if the net comes back up."
"Barriss wouldn't do that," Ahsoka protested.
"Are you sure?"
Voss raised an eyebrow.
Kenobi, standing beside him, just looked coolly interested and a little calculating, his head tipped to one side like a curious predator's. "Of course I am. Barriss is my friend."
"Plo and Tholm didn't vet her for this for a reason, Ahsoka," Voss said gently. "I know we didn't exactly have a lot of time to put it together, but Barriss is a lot like Luminara, and Luminara never would have gone along with this. No offense," he added to Kenobi.
"None taken," Kenobi said. "I figured that out around the time Luminara slammed my wife's head into a dresser."
He frowned a little.
"I always knew she would choose the Order over our friendship if it ever came up, but it was still something of a shock. I don't know how she's going to take Padawan Offee's decision."
"Probably not well, if I know Luminara," Voss said.
So, this should be interesting.
He clapped Kenobi on the shoulder, making the other man stagger, then added to Ahsoka.
I know Barriss is your friend, Ahsoka. I want to trust her too. But there's a lot at stake here, and I don't know if she's thought through the repercussions of her actions. So right now, it's better for all of us if we don't put her in a position where she might have to make a decision like that.
Ahsoka bit her lip. Barriss wouldn't do that. The Council would treat her the same way they would treat the rest of us. She had to stop, drawing in a sharp breath, because something about the way she had said it suddenly made what they were doing real, in a way it hadn't been even when they had met Master T and Master Dralig in the temple. Treason, she thought. High treason against the Order and the Republic. And had a moment of sheer, unrelenting panic that left her dizzy and breathless. When she looked up again, gasping, it was to find Captain Kenobi kneeling in front of her, Master Voss standing just beside him.
Ahsoka? He asked gently.
Was it hard? She asked him, blurting out the words. To leave the Order?
Kenobi hesitated, then said, Yes, it was, and continues to be the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I don't think about it every day anymore, but I did for years afterwards. I still think about it.
Do you ever think you made the wrong decision?
He was silent, his gaze turned inwards.
Master Voss frowned a little, his gaze fixed on his friend.
I don't know, Kenobi said at last. I love Naboo. I love Padme, Queen Amidala. I've never regretted leaving the Order. But whether it was the right decision or not, I think it was right for me, and for Padme, and for Naboo. I don't know whether it was right for the Order, especially after today.
Master Voss dropped a hand to his shoulder and squeezed.
I loved the Order, Kenobi said slowly. I didn't know what that meant then, to love something. To really love something. We aren't taught, as Jedi, what love is. We can't identify it when we do feel it, because we aren't supposed to. At least, not the way I was taught.
His gaze slid up at Master Voss for a moment.
But I did love the Order. I just couldn't be part of it anymore. It wasn't a case of loving something or someone else more than I loved the Order. I just couldn't be that person anymore. The kind of person who would be willing to stand by and let the Senate, let the Republic, make the decisions that they were making. And I'm not saying that that is what all Jedi are. But I couldn't do that. And I couldn't stay in the Order and not turn into the kind of person who would. So I left. And that decision will haunt me until the day I die.
Even though...
He nodded. Yes. Even though it was the right decision. Even though I gained so much more from making that choice than I could ever have dreamed of 13 years ago. I don't regret it. But I was offered the opportunity to come back, more than once, and every time I wanted to say yes. Even now. Even after what the Order did to me. I was raised in the Order. Until I went to Naboo, it was the only life I had ever known. And sometimes, I still want it back, even though it wouldn't be the same. I'm not the kind of person who could be content with that life anymore. But I was once, and I still remember being that person. It's tempting, sometimes. But there's no way I could live with it, not now.
I can't, Ahsoka confessed. Even though she had said it before, it still felt like treason to say it loud. Live with it, I mean. Just go on like nothing has happened. I know I'm supposed to be able to, but... We're Jedi!
We're supposed to be better than that.
Yeah, we are, Master Voss said. We're not the ones who've forgotten what it means to be Jedi, Ahsoka. It's not supposed to be easy to be what we are. That doesn't mean it's supposed to be hard. That just means it isn't always going to be easy. Or simple.
It's just a lot, Ahsoka managed to say. She looked at her hands, surprised to see that they were trembling. They had been steady when she had still been in the temple, talking with Master Plo about what they were going to do. He hadn't been the one to suggest that she go with Master Voss and Captain Kenobi. That had been her idea. Her decision.
I know, Kenobi said. Believe me, I know.
He glanced at Master Voss again, then looked back at Ahsoka, and said slowly,
Do you want to go back?
For a moment, that was the only thing Ahsoka wanted. To go back to the temple, to forget that any of this had ever happened. But it had. For the Jedi, what mattered wasn't whether or not you went through with it. What mattered was whether you thought about it at all. And Ahsoka had made her choice. Now she just had to live with it. No, she said. I don't want to go back. The last time Anakin had been to Alderaan, he had been 11 years old, on a training mission with Obi-Wan and a group of younglings the same age as he was, but unassigned to their own masters yet. With the usual unpredictable Jedi luck, they'd ended up stumbling right into a smuggling operation, which had been how Obi-Wan met Bail Organa in the first place. Given that that clearly hadn't happened here, Anakin couldn't help but wonder what had become of the smugglers. He doubted they were still operating after all this time, but you never know. He, Obi-Wan, and Padme were at the back of the small group, followed by a pair of Royal Alderaanian guards. Amidala and the Organas were just close enough that he could hear their low conversation if he strained, trying not to use the Force to help, because even though he had mostly recovered from his burnout, using the Force still hurt sometimes. Padme, there's something I didn't tell you over the comms, Queen Breya said. She had a soft, low-pitched voice, with a much stronger Alderaanian accent than her husband. Amidala stilled, forcing the group to a halt in the wide corridor they were traversing. Obi-Wan. Anakin didn't need the Force to recognize the fear in her voice.
No, I'm sorry, Breya said. She laid a hand on Amidala's arm, her expression sympathetic. We haven't heard anything from Coruscant since the relays went down. Satine is here.
Obi-Wan's shock rang so clearly in the Force that Anakin swung around to look at him even before he spoke.
Satine.
Breya turned towards him. Anakin didn't know how well she knew Captain Kenobi, but she had been informed of the situation in advance, and she looked a little wary, but willing to be polite. At this point, Anakin supposed that that was the most they could hope for.
The Duchess of Mandalore, yes. She arrived last night, she added to Queen Amidala. We sent a courier to Mandalore to inform her of the meeting, but since the Council of Neutral Systems had traditionally refused to involve itself in this affair, and Mandalore technically wasn't part of the delegation when we seceded, neither Ma nor I expected her to come.
Amidala's brow furrowed slightly.
Did she say why?
She said from the beginning that she didn't agree with Naboo's secession and that she wasn't going to support it.
She said that she would talk to you and Obi-Wan when you arrived, Breya said. I wasn't sure how to... Well...
She glanced over at Obi-Wan, a little humor in her brown eyes.
I don't quite understand the situation myself, and I didn't think that I was really the one to explain it.
I see. Amidala rubbed her fingers against the fabric of her cape, her expression thoughtful. Well, this should be interesting. I'll talk to Satine, though I'm not sure how she's going to take it. We don't always see eye to eye.
She paused, looking at Obi-Wan.
Anakin had noticed she didn't look at him if she could help it, and he was pretty sure he knew why.
"I think it might be better if you and your friends aren't there, Master Jedi," she added after a moment.
Obi-Wan dropped his gaze. After that initial moment of surprise, he had walled himself off. Anakin couldn't sense anything from him in the Force.
"You may be right," he said.
Amidala glanced at Brea, who said something to one of her ladies-in-waiting. The woman detached herself from the group and strode towards them, her expression curious.
"I'm Giselle Antilles," she said. "If you'll come with me, I'll show you to your rooms."
They left the Queen and the Alderaanians behind as Giselle led them briskly away. Anakin fell back to nudge Obi-Wan with an elbow.
"Are you all right?"
"Yes, of course," Obi-Wan said, automatic. Then blinked and added, "It was just a surprise. I wasn't expecting that." Anakin had only the barest idea how Satine Kryze had died in their own universe, since Obi-Wan categorically refused to talk about it, and the circumstances were beyond his security clearance otherwise.
"But you knew she was still alive in this universe?" he ventured cautiously.
Obi-Wan nodded, his expression distracted.
I just didn't think that she would be here."
"That must be..." Anakin didn't have to imagine what that must be like, because he had seen the other Obi-Wan, the one from the other universe, and the way he had reacted to meeting Anakin. Obi-Wan glanced aside.
"I was just surprised," he said again.
Padme, walking a little ways ahead of them beside Giselle, looked back at them over her shoulder, her expression concerned. Anakin gave her a thin smile, then turned his attention back to Obi-Wan, trying to decide what to say. He didn't even know how the Duchess Satine had died, just that Obi-Wan had been there. Knowing that might have helped. Blast Obi-Wan for being so unwilling to tell him anything ever!
Like you're one to talk, Skywalker.
Obi-Wan, catching the thought, turned and raised an eyebrow at him. Anakin snorted softly in response and looked away, studying the gently curving halls of the Alderaan Royal Palace. He didn't exactly remember much from when he had been here last, and it was nothing like the Theed Royal Palace's airy, open design, the Senate's staid opulence, or any of the other seats of government he had visited. Anakin had seen his fair number of royal palaces and seats of government over the past 13 years, more than he'd ever dreamed of when he'd been on Tatooine. Back then, the closest thing he could think of was Jabba's palace, and not only had he never seen it, it was the one place he had had no desire to go. The suite Giselle showed them was much smaller than the one they had been given on Naboo, with only 2 bedrooms, a sitting room, and a single refresher. Most of the larger suites in the palace were being used for the delegation representatives that had come to meet with Queen Amidala, she explained to them. Normal members of Amidala's retinue would have been accounted for elsewhere, but if there was anything they weren't, it was normal. The moment the door had closed behind Giselle, Anakin and Obi-Wan both went to check the room for bugs and any other hidden tricks. Anakin didn't really expect it from Alderaan, which in his experience tended to be pretty straightforward. But he had gotten into the habit long before the war had started, and he wasn't about to let it lapse now. "Clear," he told Obi-Wan, coming out of the second bedroom. Obi-Wan emerged from the refresher, pushing a hand back through his hair, and nodded agreement.
"Clear."
Padme had perched on the arm of the sofa to watch them, pulling off her hooded cape to reveal the coiled braids pinned at the back of her neck.
"What were you expecting to find?"
Anakin shrugged.
"I don't really know, but it's better to be safe than sorry."
He sat down on the sofa beside her, stretching his legs out in front of him with a groan. Most of his burnout had cleared up, and he didn't think about it except when he was using the Force. But he had been doing so out of habit when he cleared the suite. He could feel a headache starting to pound just behind his temples. With any luck, it would bleed out into nothing,
but he couldn't bring himself to be particularly hopeful on that note. Padme leaned over to put a hand on the back of his neck, and Anakin shut his eyes, leaning back into the touch. It seemed like it had been months since she had touched him. It hadn't been, but it was always hard to have her there and not know whether or not she wanted him. And he didn't know what Vader had done to her. If she wanted him to push, if he wanted to, what that might mean. What any of it meant. Anakin wanted her, wanted Obi-Wan. He'd have to be dead not to want both of them, even if he wasn't always sure what that meant. But if it was a choice between having them and keeping his soul, Vader hadn't had either in the end. Anakin put a hand to his forehead, shading his eyes, and thought, "The code has to exist for a reason. Jedi don't do things for no reason." As if he needed a reason beyond Vader. Face it, Skywalker. You're just trying to find a loophole in the code. There aren't any. He shifted a little, enough to shrug off Padme's hand, and tried not to regret the loss. "Why are we even here?" he asked, more to fill the sudden silence in the room than out of any real desire to know. "Is it just that the Queen doesn't trust us enough to let us out of her sight?" "I'm sure that's part of it," Obi-Wan said. Anakin felt rather than heard him approach. A moment later, he was gratified to feel the sofa dip slightly under Obi-Wan's weight as he settled down on Anakin's other side. "But I believe her actual reasons are a little more practical." Anakin blinked and dropped his hand. Obi-Wan just looked tired, typical, and a little thoughtful. Padme twisted to frown at him. "What do you mean?" "Isn't it obvious?" Obi-Wan said, raising an eyebrow at her, and when she didn't respond, added, "She wants Anakin and I to rescue her husband from the Jedi Temple if the Council refuses to trade him for the others." Anakin frowned. "She doesn't think that we'd do that, does she? The Trade Federation's one thing, but going against the Jedi? The Republic?" He shook his head. "I won't do it." He blinked when Obi-Wan didn't respond and looked up. "You wouldn't, would you?" "It would be difficult under the circumstances," Obi-Wan said, which didn't actually answer the question. "Her Highness hasn't said anything to me about this," Padme said. "Did she ask you, or..." "Not in so many words," Obi-Wan said, hesitating. "She dropped a few hints. It seemed the logical conclusion." Padme sighed and squared her shoulders. "Will the Council trade him for the others?" Obi-Wan shook his head. "It's never come up, but I wouldn't vote for it in the same situation. I don't think any of the others would either." "What if it was me?" Anakin said, before he could help himself. "Not Aether Luminata or..." Obi-Wan's head jerked up, his face doing something complicated that Anakin couldn't interpret even with the Force. Anakin heard Padme's breath catch behind him, her hand falling to his shoulder and squeezing. "Anakin," Obi-Wan said finally, his voice low. "I thought it was you." Oh, Anakin said. I forgot. He glanced down, but that didn't matter to the Force, and he felt the edges of Obi-Wan's hurt before his shields closed, effectively shutting Anakin out. It wasn't aimed at Anakin, unformed and inchoate, but he found himself inching forward along the couch towards Obi-Wan. He reached Obi-Wan just as Obi-Wan looked up, his eyes widening a little. Anakin actually didn't know what he wanted to say, just that further variations on the theme of "I forgot" would probably be unwelcome. "I'm sorry," he added finally, and was a little gratified to see Obi-Wan blink when he realized how close Anakin was. "It wasn't your fault,"
Obi-Wan said. He pushed a hand back through his hair, his fingers lingering for an instant on the thin white line of faded scar tissue that Anakin couldn't remember seeing before. He leaned forward to catch Obi-Wan's wrist, feeling him still beneath his palm, then frowned as he touched the scar.
"Hey, is this new?"
Obi-Wan's eyes went wide, as if Anakin had touched on a nerve.
"It's nothing," he said too quickly. "I fell."
Anakin knew what that felt like, but on what? A face full of broken glass? Jedi healed faster than normal beings. Scars that looked years old on them could be only months or weeks old. And Anakin had thought he knew every mark on Obi-Wan's body.
Obi-Wan's gaze flitted over Anakin's shoulder to Padme. Then he said stiffly, "Off a tank."
He tried to smile and added,
"Apparently I bounced off the side and then off the swoop beside it before I hit the ground."
Anakin frowned at the mark, which was mostly covered by Obi-Wan's hair but stretched along his hairline from his forehead past his ear. He had been close enough to kiss him. Had kissed him, but had been too distracted to notice it before. And Obi-Wan was clearly uncomfortable with the attention. "When?"
There was a long moment of silence that stretched out between them and made Anakin's nerves itch. At last, Obi-Wan said, "Odrin."
Anakin stared, appalled.
"Vader?"
he blurted out.
"No."
Obi-Wan wouldn't meet his eyes, but after a moment he admitted, "Backlash."
"Oh.
Oh." Not even the Jedi were quite sure how psychic backlash worked, just that it did, usually with unpredictable effects that could sometimes manifest physically. Anakin had heard of Force users driven mad, even killed, ones who had had the Force burned out of them entirely, all their midichlorians self-destructing under the immense pressure. The Ouroboros misfiring must have caused enormous waves in the Force, and Vader's appearance couldn't have helped. Not to mention whatever Anakin's disappearance had done to him, if it had reverberated back across the Master Padawan bond. Anakin himself hadn't caught any backlash, but the Force was strange like that. Two individuals could have entirely different reactions to the same occurrence.
"It looks worse than it was," Obi-Wan said, obviously trying to console him. "You know, head wounds always bleed terribly."
Anakin hadn't even thought about that. But now he was, because even though it was faded now, it must have been an ugly, awful wound. The end of the scar was so close to his ear that he must have come very near to losing it.
He braced himself for the response and said, "Rex said it was bad down there." Obi-Wan frowned a little, though the expression didn't seem to be aimed at him. He felt Padme's wariness in her Force, sensed her leaning forward a little to hear the answer.
"It was," Obi-Wan said at last.
He took a breath, squaring his shoulders as if preparing to go into battle, and admitted,
"I don't remember most of it."
Anakin stared at him.
"What?"
Obi-Wan glanced aside.
"The mind healers at the temple called it memory loss caused by traumatic shock and the psychic backlash from the Master Padawan bond shattering."
"But it didn't break," Anakin blurted out, since that was the only thing in that sentence he even wanted to touch with a 6-foot pole. He could feel the connection between them, strong and alive and so familiar that the idea of its absence seemed worse than losing his hand had been. He could replace a limb.
"We didn't know that at the time," Obi-Wan said.
He pushed both hands back through his hair, his expression distracted.
"It seemed the most reasonable explanation."
to the... Anakin stopped and shut his eyes, remembering some of the hints Obi-Wan had dropped since Mustafar. It transferred to Vader, didn't it? Obi-Wan jerked his chin in something that might have been a nod. The thought made Anakin sick. That Obi-Wan had been connected to Vader, to a Sith Lord, and not understood what was happening to him, what was... And even then, that he hadn't realized that Darth Vader had once been Anakin Skywalker. Anakin didn't know whether or not to be relieved by that. No wonder Obi-Wan had been sparking Force lightning, Anakin thought, and grimaced. Having that kind of a link to a Sith would probably do things to a Jedi, even a master like Obi-Wan. It must have done things to the other Obi-Wan. After a moment, Obi-Wan added softly, I didn't mean that I would have left you to the Separatists, you know. I just meant that I wouldn't have let it get that far if I had known there was a chance. I know that, Anakin said impatiently. The Council doesn't exchange prisoners. It sends us in to do rescue ops. It's not like we haven't done it a couple of times already. It was just that the Council had to be certain that there was actually someone to rescue first. The Order wouldn't send its knights into a situation any more uncertain than it had to. They'd gone after Eeth Koth because they had known not only that he was still alive, but where he was. And even Pyle because they knew that Dooku was keeping him alive in order to learn the hyperlink coordinates from him. The Council hadn't sent anyone after Anakin because they had been convinced he was dead. Except, Anakin had been missing for 2 months. And it had taken that long for Obi-Wan to decide to come after him. Even in the middle of a war, 2 months was a long time. Most Republic prisoners didn't last that long in Separatist custody, even Jedi. Especially Jedi. Anakin wouldn't have waited 2 months. He wasn't sure he would have waited 2 days. Obi-Wan must have heard that thought in the Force, because he said very gently, At the time, I didn't have any reason to think you were still alive. The Council kept you on the missing list out of courtesy, because we didn't have a body or confirmation of death. What changed? Anakin blurted out. Obi-Wan bit his lip, glancing over Anakin's shoulder at Padme, then said reluctantly, Quinlan Vos and I were deployed to Tellarath. Well, I was deployed to... It's complicated. Isn't it always with Master Vos? Anakin said dryly, and saw Obi-Wan smile for an instant. Indeed. He sighed. Vader was there too. We didn't... But he said something to me. Something that made me think... And I could feel something. I just didn't know what it was. You didn't tell me Darth Vader was on Tellarath, Padme said. Anakin turned to look at her and saw her frowning. Obi-Wan winced. It was not one of my better moments, he said neutrally. Why? What happened? Nothing I'm proud of, Obi-Wan said. And rubbed a hand over his face, clearly meaning to cut off that line of conversation. Right, because that wasn't the sort of thing that would make Anakin worry at all. He was trying to decide the best way to press further and actually get answers instead of just getting Obi-Wan to talk around whatever had happened, when Obi-Wan said, I am surprised that Satine is here. From what I've heard, Mandalore has been careful to dissociate themselves from the Confederacy. Anakin thunked his head back against the couch cushions. No, not more politics. For someone that claimed to hate politics and politicians, Obi-Wan sure talked about them a lot. There was a momentary pause before Padme answered, as if she was as reluctant to change the subject as Anakin was. I was there when she contacted Queen Amidala after the Naboo fleet bombed Sereno. It was a very
tense conversation.
Knowing Satine, I can imagine.
Obi-Wan rubbed a hand over his forehead, seemed to realize that neither of them was as interested in Satine cries as he was, and then got to his feet. Anakin started to stand too, instinctive, and Obi-Wan waved him back down.
Since the Queen doesn't seem to need us at the moment, and we aren't on a converted spice freighter with 30 other people, I thought I'd shower, he said.
Oh, he had a point there. Annie Skywalker had made a lot of mods to the Twilight, but the ship had never been meant for shipping people rather than cargo, and saying that the quarters had been cramped was something of an understatement. Anakin had been on troop carriers with more space underfoot, and Senar didn't actually particularly care about hygiene when they were designing those, so that was saying something.
Good idea.
Obi-Wan flashed him a narrow grin and headed off towards the refresher as Anakin tried to sniff his own sleeve as inconspicuously as possible. Padme slid off the arm of the couch and took Obi-Wan's empty seat, reaching down to undo the line of buttons on her low-heeled boots.
I hope he's all right, she murmured. What happened to Satine in our universe was awful, and I don't think he ever got over it. Having her here will just bring it all back up.
Anakin didn't want to talk about Satine Cries anymore, except... Wait, do you know what happened to her? Did Obi-Wan tell you that?
She blinked in surprise.
Darth Maul murdered her, she said. He used a Death Watch threat to lure Obi-Wan to Mandalore, and once he was there, he killed Satine. She died in his arms.
What?
Anakin said, aghast, and then had to fight down, why would he tell you and not me?
He had a pretty good idea of the answer to that particular question.
I don't know any of the details, Padme said, setting her discarded boots aside. And he wasn't supposed to tell me. He just didn't really care about anything at that point. It was just after Odrin.
Oh, Anakin said softly.
She put an arm around him, careful and a little wary, but this time he didn't try to pull away. He turned his face into her hair, pressing a kiss to it, and felt her relax a little against him. After a moment, she pulled her legs up onto the couch and leaned into him. He both wanted and didn't want to ask her about the weeks after Odrin, if it had been as terrible for her as it had been for Obi-Wan. It must have been bad for both of them. Anakin wasn't sure that he wanted to know just how bad. For him... At least he had had Obi-Wan. And Obi-Wan, anyway. And at the time, he had been content in the knowledge that when he got home, everything would be unchanged, like a dragonfly caught in amber. He had been so sure that they were safe, that he would come home and it would be like nothing had ever happened. Instead, almost everything had changed. He wanted them. Anakin had known that already, but it still hit him like an electric shock. He wanted them, both of them, so badly that he could barely think it through. It wasn't desire, or at least it wasn't just desire, although that was tangled up in it too. Because Anakin had lost them, even if he hadn't quite realized it at the time, and he had been lucky enough to get them back. They had already lost everything except each other. The only thing Anakin had left to lose was his soul, and he had given that into their keeping a long time ago. Anakin was a Jedi Knight. He knew who he was. Desire couldn't take that from him. Death couldn't take that from him. He wouldn't let the dark side take it either. After Master Voss and Captain Kenobi left, Ahsoka sat in the cockpit and watched the starline streak by in the viewport for a while, then remembered what Master Voss had said about Barriss and made herself get up,
She had been up for so long that everything had gone bright at the edges of her vision, navigating almost as much by the echoes from her mantras on the Force as she was by sight in the unfamiliar starship. The Scorpion, Master Voss's starship, wasn't very big. It was a modified hunter-killer type ship, the kind that bounty hunters often used. Very fast, lightly shielded and lightly gunned, and meant to be operated only by a single pilot, though there was a belly gun that a co-pilot could operate. The two cabins were barely more than cubbies with fold-down bunks stuffed in them, and the second one clearly hadn't been used for anything except storage for a while. Ahsoka was tired enough that she was thinking longingly about it, though. She hadn't slept in almost 20 hours at this point, and Togruta usually needed a lot more sleep than that. She stifled a yawn into her fist, made sure the cockpit door was closed behind her, and threaded her way through the narrow corridors to the kitchen cum lounge, where she found Barriss sitting with her hands wrapped around a calf mug. She had taken her headdress off, and her hair stuck up in fluffy black spikes as she frowned down into her drink. Ahsoka slid into the seat next to her, making Barriss look up. She gave Ahsoka a weak smile and said, "Where are Master Voss and Captain Kenobi?" "I think they're having sex," Ahsoka admitted, which made Barriss's eyebrows shoot upwards. "Or sleeping, I guess. You know the kind of backlash some knights get from the trials?" Barriss nodded. "Shouldn't it have appeared earlier? Or did it?" "Master Voss thinks the wards and the high security cells delayed it somehow," Ahsoka explained. "Neither he nor Captain Kenobi are trained as consulars, so they're not really sure how. And it's backlash, so..." She spread her hands in a placatory gesture, but Barriss just nodded again. She pushed her calf mug away and tipped her battered chair back on its legs, pleating the fabric of her skirt between her long green fingers. Ahsoka leaned an elbow on the table, resting her chin against the palm of her hand, and tried not to fall asleep. "Do you trust him?" Barriss said suddenly. Ahsoka blinked, trying to get her jumbled thoughts together.
"Which him? Master Voss or Captain Kenobi?"
"Either, I suppose. Both."
"Yes, I think so. Yes."
Ahsoka was a little surprised to realize it was the truth. "They're Jedi."
"Captain Kenobi is a separatist," Barriss said doubtfully. "He passed the trials, but..."
She looked down, smoothing her hands over her skirt, then raised her gaze.
"Are you really going to do this, Ahsoka? Leave the Order, leave the Republic, and go over to the Separatists? To Queen Amidala? You're a Jedi!"
"That's why," Ahsoka said, straightening up. "We are Jedi, Barriss. It isn't about the Republic or the Confederacy. It's about what's right. And there's something wrong with the Order now. Something rotten inside it. Maybe the Order isn't where the Jedi belong anymore." Barriss shook her head. "That doesn't mean you can give up on it, Ahsoka. If something matters to you, you fight for it. You don't leave it behind."
"You're here," Ahsoka pointed out.
"For my master, not for what you are." Barriss looked at her urgently. "Master Kun is staying. Why can't you too?"
"Because it isn't right," Ahsoka insisted. "Revan's cure, Barriss, and all those secrets. It's not what the Jedi Order is supposed to be. And maybe Queen Amidala is right. Some things are beyond fixing."
"The Jedi Order, it wasn't always like this. It's not supposed to be like this. This isn't the old Republic, and I'm not the only one who feels that way. There's Master Voss, and Master Tholme, and Master Saw."
Barriss grimaced.
"They're radicals. Everyone knows that."
"Shakti and Syndralic let us go," Ahsoka said. And as Barriss's eyes widened, she quickly explained what had happened in the temple. When she had finished, Barriss was staring at her in hurt, stunned shock.
"Do you think..." she blurted out,
then stopped.
What?
They can't. It can't. No one would ever...
Barriss, what are you talking about? Ahsoka said, bewildered.
Barriss put her hands down on the table, but not before Ahsoka saw that they were shaking slightly. She looked up at Ahsoka with wide eyes and said in a low voice,
"Schism."
The single word sent a shiver through Ahsoka. She felt herself jerking backwards, as though the word had been a blow, leaning away from Barriss, as though by doing so she could distance herself even from the idea. "That's not going to happen," she said. "It's not. It can't." Barriss looked as sick at the idea as Ahsoka felt.
"But what if it does?" she said, her voice trembling over the words. "If you and Master Voss and all the others leave, it's not a schism!"
It was possible Ahsoka sounded a little hysterical, but the idea was almost beyond imagining. The Jedi Order had split before, but not for millennia, and it never, ever ended well. Every time in the past that divisions in the Order had led to a schism, people died. Jedi died. It's just a difference of opinion, that's all. It's not a schism. You need more people for that.
But if Master T and Master Drolig, they're still with the Order, Ahsoka protested. It's not like that. That doesn't happen anymore. This isn't the old Republic. The Order doesn't do that.
Just like it doesn't hurt the innocent. Just like it doesn't go to war. Just like it doesn't decide to use Revan's cure on a knight who passed the trials. Even thinking about it made her want to throw up. Barriss looked down at her flattened hands, then slowly curled them into fists.
"I hope you're right," she said.
"I am," Ahsoka said, with more certainty than she felt. "No one would do that. Everyone knows what happened the last time."
Jedi killing Jedi.
It couldn't happen.
It wouldn't happen.
But the Order is sick. There's something rotten inside it. Something broken. And some things are beyond fixing. Ahsoka couldn't think that way. It wasn't just heresy. It was madness. Almost suicide. The Order couldn't survive a schism.
"You will come back, won't you?" Barriss asked in a low voice. "You see..."
"I can't," Ahsoka said, hating the way her voice hitched in the middle. "It's not where I want to be anymore. It's not who I want to be anymore," she added, remembering what Captain Kenobi had said.
Barriss looked stricken.
"But... I'm just one Padawan. I don't matter."
"Obi-Wan Kenobi was just one Padawan, and all of this happened because of him."
"That's different. I'm not like him." Ahsoka shivered anyway, looking around the way Barriss had, but neither Captain Kenobi nor Master Voss was in the room to hear it.
"I can't go back, Barriss, and I don't want to."
Barriss shook her head.
"You still have time to think about it, Ahsoka," she said. "You can come back with me and Luminara and Master Koth."
"I'll think about it," Ahsoka conceded, but she didn't think that she would change her mind. She and Barriss sat in silence for a little while longer, Ahsoka's head drooping lower and lower to the tabletop as the idea of going to sleep right there became more and more attractive. Until Barriss said suddenly,
"Ahsoka."
She raised her head with difficulty, blinking bleary eyes, and tried to focus on Barriss.
"You did all that research on Darksider trials for Master Kun," Barriss said, her voice hesitant.
Yeah?
"Did you find out, what happened to the others? The other knights that the council decided to use Revan's cure on?"
Ahsoka pushed herself upright, passing a hand across her face as she tried to remember.
Revan disappeared, she said slowly. Everyone knows that. The others... She had to count them off on her fingers. One of them died on a mission. Another one killed herself. Two went mad. One turned to the dark side again and was killed in a duel with her former apprentice. Another one became a temple guard. I guess he was fine because there aren't any other records on him, or at least none that I had access to. There was one more. She racked her brain. Oh, he died in a training accident. But Master Plo said, from the way the records are phrased, he probably killed himself too. Barriss swallowed. I've never heard any of that, she said. That doesn't sound like much of a cure.
It isn't.
They both looked up to see Master Voss leaning in the doorway, his arms crossed over his chest.
Revan's cure isn't a cure, he said again. It's a curse. It's an abomination in the Force, and the fact that the Jedi ever thought it was a good idea, even back in the Old Republic, proves that we aren't infallible, much as we like to think we are.
Barriss shifted in her seat a little. But
it's not a cure, Master Voss said, because cure implies that there's something that can be fixed. If someone goes to the dark side, or if they act against the Order or the Republic, that's a decision. You have to live with your decisions. The Council can't change that just because they don't like the outcome, or because they want to save someone who used to be a good Jedi.
He made scare quotes around the word with hooked fingers.
And you sure as blazes can't cure someone who doesn't have anything wrong with them in the first place.
He paused, the weight of his silence meaningful even without the Force.
What the Council decided to do to Obi-Wan would have been wrong even if he had been found guilty of using the dark side. And he wasn't. The Force itself judged him innocent of that crime. The Council couldn't have made a worse decision if they had been trying.
Barriss bit her lip.
Revan's cure is awful, she agreed at last. But what else could they have done?
Master Voss tilted his head to one side, his gaze fixed on her.
Well, he said, one option would have been to trade him back to the Separatists in exchange for Ethan Luminara.
Barriss flinched very slightly.
He betrayed... No, he didn't. Master Voss sighed. He resigned the Order. Naboo seceded from the Republic. Neither is illegal, no matter what the Council or the Senate thinks. I thought we'd gone over this before, he added reproachfully.
But... She stopped and licked her lips before going on.
You're all doing this, leaving the Order, for him. Not for him, for the Jedi. For what the Jedi should be. Because it's the will of the Force. I can't agree with that, Barriss said. I won't.
Master Voss nodded.
No one is asking you to, he said gently. Just think about it, Padawan Offee. Sometimes things aren't as simple as black and white.
Even at this hour, there were still people in the Senate building, though they were mostly aides, cleaners, or staff, rather than senators and representatives. Mace passed blue-robed Senate guards stationed at regular intervals in the corridors, none of whom acknowledged him. That there had presumably been a Jedi task force with a Republic battle group that had been destroyed at Gaius had never been publicly released, so his appearance in the Senate building raised no eyebrows. There had been plenty of Jedi in and out of the Senate building over the past few weeks. One more wasn't an anomaly to the guards.
The guards posted outside the executive office recognized him and let him pass without challenge, the door sliding closed behind him as Mace passed through the antechamber. He waved the inner doors open, Dooku and Yoda both looking up as he entered. To his credit, the Supreme Chancellor didn't even look surprised to see Mace there. Disappointed, Mace didn't need the Force to recognize that,
but hardly surprised. "I'm fairly certain you're supposed to be dead," he said, leaning back in his chair and raising an eyebrow. "Or in Separatist custody."
"Rumors of both were greatly exaggerated," Mace said.
Dooku flicked a finger at the control panel on the wall, the doors to the office sliding shut in response.
"I can see that," he said.
"I take it that your remarkable resurrection has an explanation? One that I will undoubtedly be fascinated to learn."
"A problem there is," Yoda asked, looking up at Mace as he dropped into the chair beside him. "Supposed to be at the temple, you are."
"A problem?" Mace repeated, letting his voice drip irony.
"You could say that, Master."
He glanced between the Grand Master and the Supreme Chancellor, weighing the options, and went with his gut.
"Obi-Wan Kenobi is gone."
"Obi-Wan Kenobi." Dooku's voice had gone flat. He flexed his long fingers, then flattened his hands on top of his desk, as though fearing that otherwise he might be tempted to do something rash.
"I take it that Captain Kenobi was not rescued by the Naboo when the battle group was destroyed at Geas."
"Kenobi was at the temple then, in our custody," Mace said. "The Council decided that under the circumstances, keeping the matter to ourselves was the best option."
"I see." Dooku looked at Yoda.
"Were you aware of this?"
"In healing sleep I was at the time," Yoda said. "Decided differently, I would not have. Later, agreed with the Council I did."
"I take it that the other missing Jedi aren't dead either."
"Master Fisto was with the battle group," Mace said. "Masters Tiplar and Tiplee confirmed that he was taken prisoner by the Naboo during the Battle of Geas. We don't know where he is."
"I see."
Dooku flicked a glance at Yoda, then looked back at Mace.
"Dare I ask if Kenobi stood trial for his presumed crimes?"
"He stood trial,"
Mace gritted his teeth, but it was Yoda who said,
"Took his trials, he did. Judged by the Force he was."
Dooku blinked, his surprise brushing the surface of the Force.
"The trials," he said, "of knighthood? I've heard that happening in the past, but not for millennia."
"Serious were the crimes young Obi-Wan was charged with," Yoda said. "Fit to judge him without prejudice, only the Force was."
Dooku nodded to himself.
"And the outcome?" "Kenobi walked out of the chamber of the ordeal alive," Mace said. "And sane," he added, since that wasn't a given and he could tell that Yoda was willing to debate that point. As far as Yoda was concerned, no one who left the Jedi was entirely sane, including the man sitting across from them. 900 years in the Order should have left Yoda with at least a dozen lines of his lineage, but only one was still extant, and that one had broken when Kenobi resigned. Yoda had never really gotten over it. For Jedi, their lineage was the only legacy they would ever leave.
"Impressive under the circumstances," Dooku observed. "I take it Kenobi's absence was not planned."
"Condemned by the Council he was," Yoda said, frowning a little at Mace. "A Jedi matter it is. Not the concern of the Supreme Chancellor."
"It was agreed that Obi-Wan Kenobi would come under the jurisdiction of the Executive Office."
"Jedi Obi-Wan Kenobi is," Yoda said. "Sovereign the Jedi are. Under the jurisdiction of the Order, Obi-Wan always will be. Agreed to this, I did not."
"The matter is no longer relevant," Mace said,
cutting Dooku off before the argument could recommence.
"Kenobi is no longer in our custody."
"I take it he has escaped," said Dooku,
his force-heavy gaze drilling into Mace.
No, Yoda said slowly, his frown deepening as he studied Mace. Not escaped. Released, he was.
The evidence seems to point that way at the moment, Mace admitted, hating to say it, especially in front of a non-Jedi. There's no one capable of slicing into the high-security cells on world at the moment. Someone let him out.
Discuss this here, we should not, Yoda said decisively. Jedi business this is.
No. They both looked at Dooku, Mace torn between irritation and relief. As Kenobi is no longer in Jedi custody, this is no longer entirely a Jedi matter. When did this happen, Master Windu? Mace gave him the fast rundown of the little he and Adigalia had discovered so far, letting both him and Yoda come to their own conclusions, and leaving out the matter of the missing Jedi. When he was finished, Yoda's expression was deeply unhappy, and Dooku's was like stone. He rubbed his fingers together, looking at the blue static of the nearest holoprojector. The Milnet relays hadn't recovered enough yet to regain the feed from Naboo, and might not do so for anything from a few hours to a few days. What, Dooku said, was this punishment the Council agreed on? Yoda and Mace looked at each other. Then Mace said, Revan's cure. Dooku shot to his feet, his hands clenched into fists on the edge of his desk. Revan's cure, he repeated, his voice flat. That has not been used in over 1,000 years.
Circumstances like this there have not been for 1,000 years, Yoda said.
You said yourself that the Chamber of the Ordeal judged Kenobi innocent of crimes against the Force, Dooku snapped, his voice sharp and biting. And you still wanted to use Revan's cure on him?
The concern of the Supreme Chancellor this is not, Yoda said.
Dooku looked him in the eye and said, Perhaps I'm wondering if Kenobi is not the only former Jedi the High Council would treat in such a manner. Dead silence followed this pronouncement. Tensions rose so high in the Force that if one of the three of them hadn't had a Jedi Master's discipline, it would have manifested itself physically. At last, his voice so brittle that Mace half expected it to break, Yoda said.
A danger to the Jedi Order, you are not, my old apprentice.
I was not under the impression that Obi-Wan Kenobi was either. Dooku's gaze never left Yoda's. He has neither acted as a Jedi nor claimed that title at any point in the past 12 years. And you said yourself that he passed the trials.
Not your concern, the decisions of the Jedi Council are, Yoda said. Not anymore.
He slid off his chair, leaning heavily on his cane.
Kept informed of the search, you will be.
I don't think you'll catch Kenobi twice, Dooku said.
Perhaps, said Yoda. Perhaps not.
Mace stood too, his exhaustion threatening to catch up with him for a moment. He had been awake all night, watching the invasion feed of the Temple Operations Center with the other masters that had remained behind, and the shadows and the Force that had hung over them for weeks seemed to have leached half his strength away.
One more thing. Is this about Kenobi? Dooku asked.
No. Just as the Milnet feed went down, we received a garbled transmission from two of the knights sent to Naboo that was partially cut off. The techs of the temple managed to unscramble it. It was from Stas Alley and Aegon Kolar. They were part of the Force infiltrating the palace of Theed. Dooku's gaze sharpened. And? According to what we have of the transmission, Mace said, Queen Amidala is dead.